David A. Price presents.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 441. I'm your host, Steve Raker, wandering through Mephisto's realm, looking for my co-hosts, Andrew the L.A. Rabbit and WWX Kevin. Well, there they are, working off their ironic penances. How's that heat treating you guys?
I was trying to remember what Amazing Spider-Man issue that was, but maybe the heat has made it so I can't remember.
Fingers crossed the weatherman says it's going to be cooler next week, Super Steve.
Always look on the bright side of life. I like that. Marvel Noise is the Marvel-centric, semi-monthly podcast, proudly sponsored by nobody, just the way we like it. You can find episodes new and old over on MarvelNoise.com and can rattle our chains over on our Facebook, X, Blue Sky, and maybe Mastodon pages. Marvel Noise.
Discord channel.
Oh, and our Discord channel. Of course, we're always interacting there. Marvel Noise and our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, are both hosted by the Deliberate Noise Network, meticulously overseen by master puppeteer Derek Coward, who we give eternal thanks to. Thank you. The last episode was our Halloween-themed show, but that won't stop me from choosing a few seasonally appropriate comics for this episode's Recent Reads Roundtable. So let's get right to it. Who's got a book?
Well, if we're... just called it a book.
Oh. Go for it, Kevin.
I don't have a book. I wanted to begin with my recent watches.
Oh, please.
I mean, it's not over. I mean, maybe it'll be over by the time this comes out. I'm not sure how many episodes that Agatha All Along is.
Oh, how is that?
It's been fun. I mean, the first episode kind of has a bit that's like, is this really how the show's going to be? And you're like, no way. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like WandaVision, like that really messed with the audience. It's like, that was almost a thing where it's like, well, we can do pretty much anything and take this audience in a way. But I mean, I wouldn't really say this show is like that, but there is a bit of a bit in the first episode and before it gets to where it's gonna be. You get the whole bringing the band together type of thing where you have to find all other sorcerers and witches and all that type of business and a mysterious character. Can you guess who it is?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely deals with some stuff in the other Marvel things, but
oh, that's cool.
I think it's pretty, like you can enjoy it on its own. And then they have to go through all these trials and stuff. So, it like, that format, you can... there's a lot of character stuff.
Well, I like the idea of it starting off with a little nod to where it came from. Like, it's a spinoff, right? Like...
Yeah.
So, there should be that... I like the idea of that before it turns into whatever it is. And I like that character very much. Obviously, she was likable enough and written well enough that they wanted to give her own show and all that. I just don't like it as Agatha Harkness, especially translated into the comic books. You know what I mean? It's like Agatha Harkness was a perfectly cool ass character, all as she was, and now she's like, I don't know, like a young alien witch woman from another planet or something. I mean, I don't know. It's
not
really
quite.
It's weird.
I know where you're going. But yeah, it's like if I would have been able to pick shows like I wanted to see, like I don't think I've... I don't know what at what point, like show 1000 or whatever. I don't know. Probably would have been further than that. But it's a fine show in itself.
Why couldn't it be Agatha's daughter? You know, like even Bewitched did that. You know, they knew Tabitha. Yeah. Okay, now you have your own show, like a young daughter of Agatha. That would work, right? Like Agatha had a whole life somewhere else that we don't know about, and here's her offspring. But nope.
Yeah, but I would probably watch pretty much any Marvel show, but I think this is more enjoyable for me than most of like Secret Invasion. Type of
picking their best shows, Kevin. Yeah.
Talk about a straw man argument.
If we're doing recent watches, I have a recent watch too.
Yeah,
I've been for the hollow, as Steve says, we're holding over the season. We've been doing the Blade Trinity in honor of them never doing another Blade movie. So we did one and two, and tonight we're watching Trinity. They're a lot of fun. We bought them on disc a million years ago. In fact, I think the little comic that came with it, I had Jimmy Palmiotti sign one time.
Wow.
Thought it'd be kind of funny, and it wasn't, because he's like, yeah, I've signed millions of these things, because obviously that pack-in comic sold probably way more than any other, you know, that DVD set probably sold 5 million or whatever compared to a comic book. But I thought it would be a funny little thing, and turns out I guess it wasn't. But anyways, they're fun. I'd forgotten. I remembered a pre-Walking Dead Norman Reedus, but I forgot Donnie Yen is in it. He's in the second one.
Hmm.
And I also
forgot the second one. I remember seeing the second one in theaters, and I was like, oh, this is all right. And then I, oddly enough, seeing it a second time on TV, I came to appreciate it more.
It has a real sensibility in old-timey kung fu movies, and I really appreciated Wesley Snipes really brings that to it. My wife was commenting how she liked his kind of intentionality about the movements of the Blade character. And I was like, the fights kind of remind me of those old Bruce Lee ones, the kind of arrogance and very stylized. And I was like, you know, vampires really make a good kung fu setting if you're not leaning into the mist and the turn into dogs and all that, because they can take a superhuman amount of punishment and deal it out. So I was like, it is a kind of a clever way to explain how in a kung fu movie they can do all these jumps and punches and twists. Not a ton of wire work, at least in the first two. But, yeah, just old, like I said, remind me kind of them old Bruce Lee. I was waiting for Chuck Norris to show up and get his butt kicked. But, yeah, Donnie Yen made him like a mute character or whatever. Because this is early. I think this was maybe his first, like, not real movie over here, as opposed to where he was a big star. I know he did like Shanghai Nights and a few other things, but he was, you know, he's starting to get introduced to America. And yeah, and they didn't give him enough, though. I would like to see more fighting, but like Ron Perlman's in it. Just people chewing up the scenery, over the top, fighty, punchy, punchy. We'll see. Trinity, I haven't seen in a while. We'll see if that holds up. But that's got Natasha Lyonne and Ryan Reynolds in his first Marvel movie.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he's a Hannibal King, I think. That's who they have him be. So it's just, was his first action movie, too, I think. Because I remember him from the sitcom Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. It was his big break.
I remember a lot of people hating on that third one, and I was going to say to you, you know, don't be afraid to watch it, because I actually remember that third one, and I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember it kind of fondly just because of what you said about the others, that it reminds me of like a bad kung fu movie where it's like, you know, there's a team of three where it's the main guy and he gets two sort of helper people, and they go on kind of a octagon like mission to get from point A to point B and do what they got to do. And along with Ryan Reynolds, isn't Jessica Biel?
Yeah, she's the other one.
That's eye candy. That's enjoyable. I would sit and watch her, you know, talk on the telephone for about 20 minutes at least. So that adds to the watchability.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. Is it good looking people filmed, well filmed, doing kooky stuff? I found that third one kind of charming, for a lack of a better word.
I think my big issue, and we'll see if it holds up, was their choice of the villain. No knock against that actor. He was the brother in Prison Break. I think he was in some of the CW as like Captain Cold or one of those. I just feel like in these movies, it's not about acting. It's about screen presence. Like Arnold, like no one thinks he's a Hamlet or nothing. Right. But when he's on screen, like he knows the job kind of. And I just felt he plays Dracula or something like that in the third one. And I just, every time I see him, like I say, he's not a bad actor or anything, but he doesn't have that kind of, I'm here to look at me kind of screen presence that you want. You know, you want to really hate the bad guy. You've got to be a real heel that you're, Stephen Dorff in the first one does a great one.
Yeah.
That kind of like, oh, you just want to punch him. You
know, right.
Like, that kind of classic villain role that does well. But yeah, the Blade, I don't know if they're streaming or whatever. We bought the discs a million years ago. But yeah, it's a fun Halloween-y, like I said, in honor of them never releasing a Blade movie. And I watched the TV show too, which I remember enjoying, but that was much more low budget.
I'll piggyback off that with my first book, which is the new Blade series. First issue, Blade Red Band, the Red Band edition, which is, you know, not for kids. Written by Brian Hill with art by C.F. Villa. And this takes place on the heels of the whole Blood Hunt event, where Blade was, I think unnecessarily used as the bad guy. I mean, it could have just been Varney getting all the vampires together and manipulating the Dark Force characters and everything like that. It could have been Varney right from the beginning. The only thing that they would have lost is the whole Blade betraying and killing Doctor Strange moment. But like, other than that, they didn't, like, Blade could have easily have been on the side of the heroes, and it really wouldn't. So I think he was unnecessarily, his other series was ended early to do this Blood Hunt thing. And I think he was tarnished without need. But anyway, here he's the retired gunslinger, right? We've seen it a million times. Manifestation is he's hiding in the Amazon until someone comes knocking and he's got to pick up the equivalent of his six shooters again. There's this group called the Spell Guard, and they try to manipulate Blade into taking out a worthy target that they would like to see eliminated. And instead, he kills the emissary, goes off to hunt the target himself, and then when he's done, he's going to double back and take out this Spell Guard group too, which ought to give us 12 issues or so of story. So, kind of interesting. Kind of sets things up.
Well, you know I like to check out weird and crazy versions of Spider-Man. I mean, we've covered Spider-Man Unlimited. We've did Spider-Man the manga. So there's a new Spider-Man being serialized by Viz. Yes, I got Viz Media on this show. With Ultraman, along came a Spider-Man. First three chapters are up for free right now. I think they usually have the first three and then, like, you can sort of like follow along, but some of them are joined to read type of deals. I mean, of course they're gonna put out some kind of like collections and stuff like that later on, next year sometime. But yeah, this is read kind of weird.
All these Ultraman books do, it seems.
Well, I don't know that much about Ultraman, like. Probably the even though he's like well known, like the one time I think I ran into him is when he had that Super Nintendo video game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I don't know, he's some dude that fights monsters, and that's pretty much all my knowledge of Ultraman.
The way you said it made me thought you were going to say ran into him at the grocery store or something.
He's the bane of the kaiju.
But I don't think, like, they purposely make things confusing, I think, because there's a point in this where they're, like, fighting, and then they're just, like, they keep on referring to it as like, your villain as Peter, and I'm like, why do they keep on saying his name? And they're like, oh, well, that's actually because he's a Peter, and I'm like, okay, yeah, give me the historical or aquatic life creature, whatever, that's called a Peter and everything. I'm like, I had a few moments where I'm like, I don't think it's the storytelling. It's just, I don't know if they found that clever, but like, there's, I don't know, things are just weird. Like, because like, Dr. Doom's attacking the city, and you're like, okay. Dr. Doom, and it seems like Dr. Doom like shoots Spider-Man all the way through, and I'm like, so is this how he's gonna get to like Ultraman's world type of thing? Or he's just hallucinating this whole episode where he goes to Ultraman's world? I'm like, I'm not convinced. But like, they have a bunch of other Marvel characters show up at the beginning, but like, Spider-Man has this thing like he often does. Like, I think Slott used it a lot, where he's like, no one's going to die. He's going to save everyone. And then Iron Man's like this cold, calculating guy where he's just like, oh, yeah, well, that person might be calling for your help and you're seeing them burning alive. But if we don't save that one's life, that person's life, we can save 10,000 people. And then I'm like, I don't think Spider-Man's going to go for that. It's like, okay, we got to stop saving Uncle Ben now just so we can save these other people instead. Like, he keeps on referencing Uncle Ben, which is nice that they remember something like that. But it's some weird...
yeah, that obscure piece of Spider-Man trivia.
Well, it seems like it has, in a way, become that. Because I'm like in something like this, I almost expect, like, it to be like the movie versions, because I'm like, okay, how many Spider-Man comics are they really going to read? Like, it's being translated from Japanese and everything. So I'm like, well, certainly they know the movie version. So I'm like, Uncle Ben doesn't really play into some of that stuff. And then once Tony Stark shows up, I'm like, okay, he's going to be like the father figure. But no, they have a flashback type of thing to Uncle Ben dying in an alleyway.
Nice. Classic.
But, yeah,
is he clutching his pearls as he gets shot?
Yeah, they just came from the theater. But no, like, enough time to impart a lesson to, like, Peter and everything. And then it's weird that, like they introduce him, and he has his mask off, and then he puts his costume on, and it's like the second chapter begins, and it's like he has his mask off again, and I'm like, why? I mean, just to introduce him, I guess, to, like, if you didn't read the first chapter, you need to be reminded of who this is. Like, if it was a movie, I'd be like, oh, the actor wants to be seen again. You got to show his face. So that's why he doesn't have his mask on. Anyhow, it's a weird book, but I mean, there's something interesting about it. I mean, Spider-Man's like, Mount Fuji, sushi, and the magical girl. Am I in Japan? So, I mean, I could see myself reading more, but I was just struck by how strange it is. Like, the other one, it seemed like it was purposely strange, and this one's like, I don't know. Like, it's
maybe like they can't
halfway
help it
there, but halfway not. It's just a weird combination of things in this one.
You're just going to sample a few, like, 700 volumes or something.
Exactly.
Starting to make sense.
He was hallucinating, and then it was a dream within a dream.
I like that Star Wars movie, but
you do
not like how some people are crazy about it and have it all like their whole reason for existence. You know, I was a farm boy kid in the middle of nowhere too, except I didn't have robots to do my chores, so That guy thinks he had it bad. So anyways, I'm enjoying, there's a new Star Wars comic, Star Wars, The Battle of Jakku, Insurgency Rising. One slight criticism, the title's way too short. They need to slide a few more parentheticals. First two are out. This is Sakura and Kirk. And it's just coming right after Return of the Jedi. Now, the real big Star Wars heads are into when the original trilogy ended, there was a lot of lore created. You know, it was a fruitful IP, so they wrote a lot about the post-Ewok life and kind of how the Empire remnants, and that's where Thrawn and everything came from. And I feel like this series is a bit of a return to that, because the setup is, hey, there's some of these Empire dudes, and they're not rolling over. You know, the Empire system is the Moffs control various sections, and one of these Moffs is like, oh no, the Empire is still around. We are the Empire. And so that's going to be the conflict. And that makes a large degree of sense. What I'm hoping is it's not going to be hamstrung too much by setting it right after Return of the Jedi. I'm hoping we're going to be far enough away from the sequels that they won't feel the need to put all those pieces in place. So like any good, I feel like Marvel's figured out these sort of between the moments, Roy Thomas, Geoff Johns, Star Wars stuff, where you create a bunch of new characters. So they're putting together a crack team, and they're nobody ever heard of. So it's great, because now you're like, oh, some of these people can die. But you also have Luke, Han, Leia grappling with, like, what's the shape of the Empire? And, you know, what are we going to do? Where is the next step going? So you have your familiar characters, but you also have a bunch of no names that can get wasted. And that, I think, is the smart move. Look at a cat like Dr. Aphra or whatever, you know. Very popular, very cool character. Brand new. So there is the risk. I mean, now she's obviously too successful to die, but you can always have those characters in there. So, you know, well, that's what we're going to have. I think it's maybe an appeal to those people who like that. It seems reasonable. Like, it's not like the Empire is just going to roll over because the boss is dead. You know, so I like how Marvel's treated them. So first two issues, thumbs up. Steve, I know you sometimes read the Star Wars comics. Not sure if you've moved on to those or not, but I like the first two have been fun.
I still have a couple to read from the era before, and then I'm going to hit those.
Yeah, I'm also enjoying that. I think there's not a lot right now, and as longtime listeners know, Andy likes it when there's not 100 series I'm supposed to be reading. So it's very friendly to me that way.
You know, I haven't read a Star Wars comic in a while.
Well, this is, if you were, I would think those people in the Dark Horse era would like this, because it's the, you know, well, it's not the prequel era, if that's your thing. But if you're into the, hey, I like that post-Star Wars Thrawn, Empire Remnant, or whatever they called it, and they're fighting with the New Republic and all that stuff, that seems like right up your alley. And plus, picking it up right, like they're at the party on the Endor planet. So it's right after, which is kind of nice. A little yub nub music right here.
I read the other new Red Band book, which is Werewolf by Night, number one.
That's right.
That has an EM Gist cover. This is written by Jason Liu, with pencils by Sergio Davila, and inks by Jay Laystein, J.P. Mayer, and Craig Young.
What if it was drawn by Sergio Aragonés?
That would be so awesome. So awesome. I would like to see his tentacled castle monster. We've got Jack Russell living in this aforementioned castle. It's remote and it's secluded, and he's fighting tentacle monsters that live there and such. And he's all beefed up too. He's like he looks like out of like the WWE era of superstars. I thought it was not him when he was first shown.
But now he's back, Steve. 90s are back.
Yeah. Even Jack Russell was, you know, had normal proportions in the 90s, though. Then he gets big when he's the werewolf. Well, if he's huge when he's not the werewolf, it kind of diminishes the werewolfing. But anyway.
That would be funny. They had a big jacked guy, and he turns into like a Jack Russell Terrier. Yeah.
So there, some of his friends in town get murdered that kind of come and help out every once in a while, and he blames himself and does all of the usual tricks to, you know, chain himself up and all that stuff. But he's innocent. Just ask Elsa Bloodstone, who shows up, investigates the murders, determines that he's innocent, and goes to help him out, and ends up having to defend herself against the werewolf, which makes for a nice action sequence. And the threat, other than, you know, being a werewolf in its own right, the threat to the werewolf and Elsa seems like it's going to be the 90s Ghost Rider villain Death Watch.
Oh.
Who teams up with the no longer Spirit of Vengeance Hood. And they take over this vampire coven. And then, you know, they're up to no good. So, could be a fun series.
You know what will be a fun series?
Tell me more, tell me more.
I'll proclaim it right here. Aliens versus Avengers.
How could it not be?
I know, like, right?
We've seen the X-Men versus the Brood, so...
If Wolverine Revenge scared you off of Hickman writing something, I mean, I think this is right into it right here. premium Hickman.
How dare you, Steve, suggest that the Brood are anything like the aliens? They're a complete...
I mean, it would be funny if the Brood did show up in here, though.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Aliens versus Brood.
I mean, I would love for that. I'm like, that seems like a gimme, but I don't know if it's going to go in that direction. And what I find is hilarious, like the continuity that's used in here, it's like, oh, the X-Men in Krakoa is around and everything. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Just use your own continuity like it didn't go away.
Lives on forever in Aliens versus Avengers.
True. But yeah, it's a pretty bleak, serious book where a lot of people have died. A lot of heroes have died. A lot of things have died and everything. So, I mean, but it's an alternate thing. Like, I can't see it being like the regular Marvel Universe type of deal. So, I mean, that's why I also make that Wolverine Revenge comparison, because we were like, you read the first issue and you're like, this can't be the real Marvel Universe, right? Almost like Avengers Twilight, in that like characters are older and that whole deal. Yeah,
well,
like
they got Krakoa. Can't they bring anybody back anyway? So,
things aren't going well for anyone, and it seems like maybe the X-Men would be like next on the list. Like, I don't know. That's the other thing. Like, I don't know how far
right
that Krakoa business, because it like, I was perfectly fine with it being just like the X-Men, and people are like, oh, now it's all people. And I feel like at that point, like, you've kind of brought it even in like too far, where they're like, oh, they're just going to use this for the whole universe now. And then it's like you just got rid of everything anyway. So, I mean, it's weird. It's just weird. So I'm just personally thinking of it as just an X-Men thing, not a, I don't know, maybe it is. Maybe it's some weird Marvel Universe where, like, at the end of the story, but that would just be weird, really odd if everything just got restored at the end, rather than just be, I don't know, like, there's one human civilization out there on one planet, and, like, the universe is destroyed at the end of the story. But I like how Apocalypse is in this, too, and he's like, ah, survival of the fittest. I can do this thing and fight some aliens, and I'm like, yes, that's what I want to see.
He would appreciate the alien, right? Just like yes. the robot guys in the androids in the regular movie.
So yeah, like all those types of things show up here, like those robotic dudes, the whole alien dudes, and then you have the remains of the Marvel heroes, like holed up in a city, trying to survive. So very engaging, very nice. We'll read more. Very impressed.
Do you know how long it's going to go, or it's not like that?
I think it's like 4 issues. But there's already been delays, so, I mean, I don't know how much.
I wonder if they got to run, like, even though I know it's all owned by Disney now, I think, because they own Fox, if Fox owned Aliens.
Yeah. But
I wonder if there's different, like, you got to get approval for every use of this character for that.
Interestingly enough, there also was just a big gap in Alien books coming out overall. Like, an annual just came out, like, last week, but it had been several months since the last Aliens book, so I don't know if there was sort of some holdup or some they were waiting to see where they were doing next as a franchise and whatever, but there may have been some creative hold up on the movie sides, and just speculating.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised. Like maybe they still get notes, but not as many notes. Like, I don't know. Maybe they can smooth the facilitation along a little easier.
Well, you have to figure anytime the next movie idea is greenlit or whatever, it probably changes what things they want to push or want to not have included in any tertiary stories. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And of course they have an ad like right on the, as soon as you open the comic for like Alien Romulus.
Plus yeah, I'm,
that's the one I just read.
I'm very cynical, but my other interpretation would be if this is in some guy's portfolio, he may want to make it seem like he's a big deal and reviewing everything. You know, sometimes people, I think, put their fingerprints on something to establish that they're still there and relevant or whatever. So maybe he's trying to whip it up so that people know, oh, yeah, look, Jim's in there. He's really making that that Aliens franchise thing by, you know, arguing about page 13, panel 3 of a comic book tie-in.
Yeah, right.
Well, aren't they also dealing with that, like, Aliens TV show?
Right. Yeah, so there's creative stuff happening. So, yeah. I could see them slowing down what they were doing as they shift gears.
Well, if we're going Halloween-y, I picked up I think it's a one-off knockabout, Crypt of Shadows. Which is a bunch of little stories kind of tying into your Agatha. She's back in her magic dimension, kind of, hey, let's see what's on the TV. I mean, it's a magic thing, but that's essentially it, what's on the magic ball. So it's a couple of little stories. So if you like an anthology book, this one, the first one is probably my favorite. It's a Scarlet Witch and Vision, Chris Condon, Jabril Morissette, Fawn, Mattia, Aya Khan, and it's Do Androids Dream in the Witch House? And the Door of Need shows up, and Wanda gets lured in and has a little fight with a mischievous person who's up to no good. Has a little funny end to it.
That was like the Vision's only point of being in that story, is to have a little funny ending. I was like, why is he even in this story? Yeah, there were 3 stories in this. I read them too, but that was my least favorite of the 3, actually.
Well, that was the one I liked the most. I thought my problem with the Green Tide was an interesting idea, but I don't know. It seems like there's a lot more implications from that idea, that the man thing was contaminating. So Namor grabs them to go clean up the mess. And that seems like a crazy. And also, I was like that the man thing was sort of like an equalizer more than a pollutant. So that one didn't. I don't know.
But it had. I don't always jive with Benjamin Percy's writing, but Rafael Ayenko they had for the art, and he does a good Namor, and he does a really good man thing. I like the visual of it, and they fight a big giant octopus monster, and then make up. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, and I like that it's classic Namor in his vest, so you know he's not as angry.
Yeah, although he was mad at the man thing, which was kind of funny as a premise to start off. That it's like, oh, Namor's pissed at the man thing, and he's going off to tell him about it. Is kind of the premise for an anthology story. You know, like this would have fit fine in like a Marvel Comics Presents, where you know it doesn't have to, you know, be the backbone of the next event or anything. It's just a little story, you know. And I felt the same way about the last one, too, which was Carlos Magno art, which is he's also pretty good. And it's Kraven hunting the werewolf by night. Who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, and then throw
that
in,
hasn't happened before.
Throw in a bunch of cameos, like yeah. Blade shows up and everything. Yep. So it was a little bit. My issue was, while it looked good, I was there were a few sequences where I was a little confused about what was happening because it moves very fast. So there was, Kevin and I always have fun about those sequences. So that was one in their combat where I was like, wait, what? How did this happen? Where did these guys go? How did it work? But yeah, also, I don't know. I feel like I want that to be a big marquee fight. Like, I would have taken double that. You know, these are two big characters. Let them go, not just a few. Especially then they slide Blade, like, you know, these are two guys that can go toe-to-toe. Let's see it. Like,
well,
a big
Kraven can't last. That's part of the issue here. Kraven starts bleeding out, and it's like, well, how many more pages can we do with this?
I just saw number
no,
one.
No, it's just a one-shot for the holiday. You know, I read the first two issues of the new Spirits of Vengeance book, Spirits Plural, and it's written by a Sabir Pirzada with art in the first issue by Sean Hill, at least the pencils, and pencils the second issue by Chris Campana.
Oh, yes.
Or Campana. Or you like to let it roll off your tongue.
Yeah.
And two different cover artists as well, which is kind of weird. And two different, complete different subject matters in the first two issues, which was also kind of weird. It made me feel like what you guys were complaining about the Turtles book, kind of just focusing on one character at a time. Because the first issue, you've got this farmer who's using the tusked skeleton of Vengeance. Remember that guy? He was like the New York City cop that was a spirit of vengeance, but he was kind of brutal. And he had a chopper. His skeleton's being used as like a cornfield scarecrow until some partying teens behave in such a way that Vengeance is reborn. And then they show also a little bit of Johnny Blaze, who's chilling on a beach until some harpy sirens attack. And not just any harpy sirens, but the harpy sirens that were featured in and were on the memorable cover of Ghost Rider 52 from back in the early 80s. It was kind of fun. I was like, didn't he fight harpies before? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, 52. Then in the second issue, it's all Blade. You've got Blade using a captured Atlantean terrorist who attacked a bunch of migrants trying to, you know, come over to Florida from Cuba or whatever. And he uses this Atlantean to tow him on a barge underwater to this remote Atlantean prison where the spirit of vengeance is being called by some Atlantean priestess who's being held there, without merit. So it's kind of cool because you got Ghost Rider underwater fighting like Atlantean prison guards and stuff with their long staves and everything. And it's kind of I don't know if I've seen that before. Kind of interesting. It was fun. And then the princess, or priestess, I should say, gives Ghost Rider like a Nick Fury whispering in Thor's ear thing that like makes the Ghost Rider collapse because there's some secret dark truth behind the spirits of vengeance that Johnny's been told. Dum dum.
They're not really about vengeance.
Yeah.
They're just about hanging out. They don't really get angry about things anymore.
They're in it for the attention.
Although Spirits of Vengeance sounds like the craziest cocktail you've ever
had.
Yeah. Definitely give you a headache the next day.
But both issues were enjoyable reads, even though there wasn't much carryover between the two. They both were focused on different things, but they were both interesting, well-paced, and the storytelling was good. I don't know that I've crossed Sabir Pirzada's work before, but they seem to know their Ghost Rider. So, see how it goes.
Well, it might have been inevitable that I would buy a spy book by Declan Shelby, right? I mean...
Oh, I wanted to get this by and see it in the store.
You're
talking about Mystique, right?
Yes, from Ashes, a New Beginning, Mystique. But I feel like I have to have a preamble every time I read an X-book because they always have these intro things. It's like, Krakoa has fallen. And I'm like, yeah, don't remind me.
Wait, is it like Old Dog where he spoils the whole content in the intro?
You know, if he would have put that on the back cover, if he could put something on the back cover and do something like that, I would have been in on the joke and it would have been the greatest. But sadly, no. And then they also say something about, oh, you know, this is the status quo, all the X-Men, like the public thinks they've been defeated and all this stuff, and I'm like, well, they didn't, they won. And you know, I sort of have my own internal dialogue and how I'm like, well, it would be awesome if there was a book, and maybe there is because I haven't read all the books, where like some mutants didn't agree with the other mutants and they're like, you know, we're going to try to do our own Krakoa thing still, different than you guys. And that could have been one book that you could have still had. All the mutants are like, now we're going to go integrate ourselves with humanity again. And the other ones are like, why would we want to do that?
Let's go set up on Mars.
Yes. Let's go do all this cool stuff that we still want to do. I don't know. Maybe there's some country somewhere where... They can do their business, right?
If the vampires can have a nation, how come the X-Men can't?
That's the thing. I'm like I keep on saying, certainly this hasn't been avoided, and like they're gonna have some flashback tale or something where they convince me, right? Not that they need to convince me, but I'm just like, seems like there's material there, and I haven't been sold on this concept. Like, you can do your crazy stuff, like bring back Bucky and everything, but you better be selling me on this stuff. That being said, this was a decent Mystique book. Like, yes, the 90s is back, because there's a lot of Maverick action in this issue, too.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's kind of funny. You sort of like, oh, so like Maverick's out supposedly hunting Sabretooth, and then Mystique gets involved on everything.
So Gideon's the big bad guy or something?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Sadly, no Gideon. He's not lounging nude in his tub. No, is not.
Or Logan's gym teacher, that little snarly guy that Sam Keith always drew in the Marvel Comics Presents. Remember that guy with the metal arms?
Blacksmith's going to show up. So, yeah, this is aiming to make Mystique, I guess, a villain again. Not that I ever really thought she was a hero. Like, even when she was, like, siding with the X-Men, I was always still sort of like, you know, that's Mystique, right? Like, maybe not so much of, like a Mr. Sinister or whatever, like, never trust that guy. But it was always questionable. And what's funny in here is if you were to ask me the status of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Nick Fury or something, I'm kind of foggy on
Man on the Wall, Kevin. Man on the Wall.
Well.
Or on the moon.
He's not doing. I mean, he could still be doing it, but he's not doing that whole Man on the Wall business here. Like, he shows up in a trench coat as a person. No funny business going on, and he's going to be passing some information on to Nick Fury Jr.
Oh, that's an LMD.
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
That's Robo Dugan all over again.
But I just appreciate it. I'm like, okay, that's what's going on. You have a new S.H.I.E.L.D. They don't have as much money. Okay, thanks for telling me, because I really don't know what their whole business is right now. So you have some cool action sequences and everything, and Mystique going around murdering some people. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You have your cliffhanger. So I could see myself reading another issue, but I'm also a little weird about all the X-Men stuff right now, too. So, I mean, we'll see.
Noted.
Well, I'm on the X train as well. I read the first two issues of Dazzler.
Wow. There we go. Jason Liu again?
Yeah, I like the Dodson covers.
Yeah, they're good.
Rafael Lorario and Ava Tartaglia. I think you're a really good art team. So what I like is the premise feels kind of like that old Spider-Woman. Like, she's just going to go on tour and crazy business is going to happen. So she's trying to do her gig. But, you know, superhero shenanigans are going to break out at every gig. So that's a pretty good. And she's got Domino as her head of security. Or maybe Strong Guy is in there, too. He's something. He might be security, but they're both. And then Multiple Man is the crew, because he can be a lot, which just reminds me of that. Weird. That Boys TV show where they had a character with a similar power doing a similar thing. And Wind Dancer and Shark Girl's the drummer. So, you know, my downside is I like the setup a lot. I like the art. It's pretty heavy-handed on the mutant stuff, which is fine. But I feel like you need a lot more of the drama with X-Men and less of the mutants and humans and who's getting along and who's not, and hey man, I'm all here to get them together. So lots of speechifying. So if that's gonna be, I mean, the old comics did that a lot too, but I feel like they laced a lot of interpersonal drama in there that kept us fed. The other thing, they really lean into the music, and that's hard in a comic book. Like, they print all the lyrics and the back and everything, and you know, maybe it's a fault of myself, and I've read plenty of kind of band themed comics, but it's more about kind of the feeling than trying to translate. So having extended segments involving the music, I don't know, works as well for me. But I tell you, she has an awesome costume. It's some kind of reflective cosmic material or whatever. So just fun to look at every panel. Like I said, the art team's great. I would just amp up the interpersonal drama, amp up the shenanigans, and, you know, maybe cut it. But that's Andy the big stick. Other people are probably like, hey, in a world divided, we need more kind of people talking to people about the right things. So it's not that I'm unhappy with the messaging or anything. I would just have a little bit less of that. But as not familiar with the art team, I would totally read whatever they did, because it's a lot of, you know, her in relatively tame outfits. Like, she does a TV interview in the second issue and she has the eye makeup, but other than that, she's wearing what probably a pop star might wear. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know anything about fashion, so, but it's not like superhero kit. So it's a lot of people, and most of her band, except maybe Shark Girl, are dressed like musician type. You know, it's less into the superhero outfits. Even, like, it's not like Strong Guy has a particularly clever superhero outfit, or Multiple Man or all them. So it's kind of fun in that way, too. And I think it's a good team for that because you got to draw a lot of, I won't say regular people, but non-superhero looking costumes and stuff. So I'm into it. Going to keep trugging along, see where they go. I don't need it to go. That's the other thing is I like this, like, shenanigans at the concert. I don't need some further thing. Like, just have fun villains and fun events and little, oh, no, what's going to happen at this one? So far it's been crashed by two supervillains. I'd like to see that in the real world, too. Like, suddenly, Steve, you're at a show and a supervillain shows up. What are you going to do?
Now, what would probably happen is they would find out ahead of time that a supervillain was going to do something, and then they would just cancel the show, and then then nothing would happen.
I mean, I would have
loved when comics, when you insert the real world into comic books.
The other thing is I would have, the one that's the closest other than Dazzler in an outfit is probably Domino, but they've sort of, I would have gone even more outrageous, I think. Kind of have some fun. Like, you, it is, go crazy with it, man. But maybe they're like, no, we want to keep it more, I guess. Well, the other thing is, what do I know what a famous musician's life is like, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's like this. I don't know.
And you don't want to be too outrageous because Jen was truly outrageous.
That's right. You know, this makes me think about the X folks again. And I think part of the thing is that messaging too. But I also wouldn't want them to remove the messaging. Like, that's kind of.
No, and I'm glad it's there. I just.
Yeah. See,
this one in particular. There's some speechifying at different points.
Yeah.
Like, she goes on an interview in the second one, and there's a whole bit with the host of the some British TV show, so there's a lot of that. But, and, hey, X-Men are filled with, they had all that God Loves, Man Kills, had all that stuff, too. But,
yeah,
like I said, you need to spike that melodrama, too. Who's in love? Who's secretly in love but can't admit to the other one they're in love, but they're in love with the other one and all that stuff.
Like, I sometimes people have been like, oh, like, I guess it's sometimes not as good writing too. Like, oh, we're tired of this or whatever in the book, certain aspects. But then I'm like, well, it would be weird if they solved something that we haven't solved.
Yeah.
very part of our lives in real life. Like, it would, like, very much not feel like you'd have to fully commit to it and everything, and it would be, I don't know, I guess it would be like a Valiant universe or some weird thing like that, like if you just totally went all in on something. Oh, that wasn't intentional, Andrew.
Yeah, you and your goddamn
all in
comics.
Holding the line at $2.99. All right. I got one more Halloween book, quickie, and then a bonus book for you to wrap up the show. The Halloween book is Marvel Zombies, Dawn of Decay, the new Marvel Zombies limited series. This is the first two issues written by Thomas Krajewski with art by Jason Murr. And this is not tied to any existing Marvel Zombies continuity at all. It's a what if.
Didn't know there was a Marvel Zombie.
Yeah, who knows?
No, you didn't? Like, they had the whole thing of the Marvel Zombies, and then they sort of went back and showed how, you know, the infection started. And they ended up going back to that same initial group for the first, I don't know, three or four limited series at least. Back in the day, the Robert Kirkman continuity and all that. But this is like a what if that features the heroes of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But they're carefully depicted in a way that it could be in the comic book 616 too. But it's, you know, Ant-Man and the Guardians of the Galaxy and, you know, the Avengers as they are in the movies. Black Widow and Hulk and all that. But it really, it's a Groot story where it's his infection. He gets a cold and spreads some alien virus that is causing this zombie-like contagion event. And then it's his decisions and actions afterwards that will define him as a hero or not. And it ends up being just Groot and the Hulk, who can understand Groot, which is kind of fun. But it's just the two of them who aren't infected. And so far it's interesting and told well, but it's, if you're going to do another Marvel Zombies thing, have it be, well, what if it was the Marvel Cinematic Universe characters dealing with it? And there's a pretty good smackdown, I should say, between zombified Thor and the Hulk in the second issue that that would cost a lot if they did it in the movies, let's just put it that way. But, it's kind of fun. But not necessary. Definitely a tertiary type thing.
Yeah.
So what happens when they run into, like, the Kotadi and stuff? Do they still eat that? Like, they don't have brains or anything.
Yeah, they're not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Are you sure, Steve? I'm pretty sure they got a movie coming up or something.
And then my bonus book is the 50th anniversary one-shot Deathlok issue special. Ooh. That came out. And it's not just Deathlok. It's Luther Manning Deathlok.
Wow. How about that?
A great Ken Lashley cover, very powerful and channeling a lot of Kirby without being at all derivative the way that Lashley is able to do. There are two stories here. The first one, just a 6-page story written by Christopher Priest with art by Denny's Cohen. That's kind of like a prequel story of Luther Manning in his military days prior to becoming Deathlok.
Oh, I picked this one up too, Steve. Yeah, I thought the art in that first little setting piece was really cool, like the post-apocalyptic thing.
And then, well, the first one was, that more like him being the soldier, right?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Following the orders.
And then the second one is a very Munch, Buckler era-esque story with kind of a touch of Kirby's Commandy thrown in for good measure. And that's a 20-page story by Justina Ireland with the first 4 or 5 pages penciled by Carlos Pagulayan. And then the rest of the issue, very nicely rendered by Luke Ross with a number of inkers. But it looks really sharp, and it feels like reading a Deathlok story from his future, which is kind of cool, until the end, which is sets up a potential connection to our era. So, and it kind of sets up for them to do something else with it in the future. But I thought the second story was really good. Made me feel like I was reading an old Deathlok kind of story, which was fun, which it should be. A love letter to the old Deathlok. It's his 50th anniversary, for crying out loud, which makes me older than that.
And Kevin, if you come across, you might like it. They have a fake magazine that they pick up and has a table of contents. And the one you might like, Kevin, page 74, Cannibal Virus, the horrifying story of a deadly outbreak on a small Pacific island by Kenneth Hale. Isn't there another Ken Hale in the Marvel Universe?
I think so.
And there's also a nice World of Deathlok map to show what New York is like during his time. And there's a Mark Panisha editorial page. And then there's 4 pages of back matter reprinted from the old Astonishing Tales days in the 70s with a Munch Buckler interview. And then a 2-page Creation of Deathlok strip gag written by Doug Munch with art by George Perez and Mike Esposito, where it has Buckler and Munch batting around ideas for Deathlok, and then they throw in the trash can, but Deathlok comes out of the trash can fully formed. And what's interesting about that, it is the first comics work of George Perez, that little 2-pager.
Yeah, I saw that and picked it up. I thought we might have talked about it, but yeah, it was fun. I'm glad I got it. And I love that found media thing where they put it in the book too.
Yeah. All right, that's another episode of Marvel Noise.
Wait, I do have one question for Kevin before we go.
Whoa.
If I can. All right, Kevin, how are your thoughts on the former New Warrior, now Avenger, Night Thrasher. Is that weird or is that me?
I was kind of planning to read that before we recorded. And then I came in and I'm like, I think I have enough material. Probably no one will bring this up anyway.
All right.
I just want to know your thoughts on next month. Weird guy to pick on.
We're just going to, on the fly, next month we're swapping. First episode will be a recent reads. And we're going to talk about the Avengers and all the other things that we didn't talk about tonight because we either wanted to talk about Halloween-y things or we didn't have time. So.
All right.
All right. So next episode, a recent reads. Another roundtable. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you doing this, as always. Until the Marvel Noise hosts can't pronounce any of the creators' names anymore. We're almost there, so I better...
I don't know.
How about until Mephisto wears a bowl cut? Make mine Marvel. Later.